Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
New criminal justice laws will be on the books in New York next year, but several Saratoga County, state, and local Republican officials are pushing for a delay. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
State Senator Jim Todisco, Assemblywoman Mary Beth Walsh, Saratoga County Sheriff Michael Zerlo, and Saratoga County DA Karen Hagan gathered at Todisco's Clifton Park office Tuesday to call for New York State to hit the pause button on the new bail reform and discovery law. Sheriff Zerlo says his staff is already taxed.
There's over 200 criminal charges now that there will be no cash bail. Currently, I have close to 300 warrants looking for people. I anticipate that to probably double or triple. Right now, our road patrol is maxed. I have them out looking for these 300 now. I just can't imagine. Once this starts after the first of the year with the staff I have, a lot of these people are going to be out there. We're not going to be able to locate them. I always come up with this scenario where if somebody's got, we'll say, a couple hundred packets of cocaine on him, and he's stopped, and he's charged, and he's released back out, and he's potentially facing 15 to 20 years. You think that person's going to come back?
D.A. Hagan says the rapid and significant changes in the law will affect everyone in the community.
Each and every case in the criminal justice system has a unique set of facts. There's nothing cookie-cutter about the cases that we deal about. And because we deal with unique sets of circumstances and facts, we should give the ability to the judges when it comes to release on bail or recognizance, we should give the judges discretion in order to take into account those unique circumstances in deciding whether or not someone should be released or not back into the community pending the disposition of their cases. And that is gone with this legislation. It's totally gone.
Todisco says lawmakers want to delay implementation of bail reform and discovery until statewide hearings can be held.
We'd love to repeal this whole thing and start all over again and really have hearings and listen and have everybody involved and let the media really get in there and expose what the concerns are, the unintended consequences. And that's why we have a bill for repeal, and now one that might have a little bit better chance, and that is a moratorium to really think reflectively on this whole thing.
Not everyone agrees. Marie Jai is supervising attorney at the Decarceration Project at the Legal Aid Society.
I would say that there has been a moratorium on bail and discovery reform for decades in New York State. That's decades of, you know, having laws in place that really disenfranchised and devastated the lives of, you know, many poor, especially black and brown people of New York State. These laws that were passed have been vetted. They were fought out. There have been hearings. There were debates. There were backroom conversations. They are, you know, sound. Right now, what everyone needs to do is get on the same page and talk about how we're going to work to make sure that these laws actually end up working and not trying to subvert them or trying to stop them before they even go into effect.
Todisco notes a special legislative session may already be in the cards. He expects lawmakers will be called back before the end of the year to deal with fusion voting.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, we witnessed 14-term Republican Peter King on Monday announcing he'll retire at the end of his term next year, making him the latest GOP lawmaker to not seek re-election. We also know that his once red district has shifted. And even this morning, we're hearing, because of how partisan things are these days, Chuck Schumer being attacked for praising the Republican lawmaker.
Well, look, you know, you can understand that Schumer is a gentleman, and he says, okay, you're retiring. I'm going to say something nice about you. No big thing. Peter King, of course, doesn't want to be in the minority. It was nice when the House was Republican for him, not maybe for a lot of other people, but for him, he was a powerful man. Now, the Democrats have taken over, and when you're in the minority, it's a tough road. So he gets out, perhaps because he thinks he's going to lose. You know, he says he wants to spend more time with his family. Have we ever heard that one before?
Well, beyond Peter King, of course, Alan, we have a number of people in the House of Representatives. We've lost long-tenured lawmakers, including Nita Lowey, Jose Serrano, and, of course, King. There's an interesting article talking about New York's loss of clout in the House. Tenure still counts for something, the article says, and Congress in New York is losing nearly a century of it by the end of 2020.
Well, you have people like Elliot Engel, a very powerful chairman, figures heavily into this whole investigation of the president. And you, of course, do see these turnovers. It's fascinating how geography can be so important. In Western Massachusetts, David, where I live, we have Richie Neal, who is the chairman of the powerful Ways and Means Committee. And right next door, we have Mr. McGovern, who is the chair of the very powerful Rules Committee. Nobody goes anywhere without a rule on a bill. So here in Western Massachusetts, hardly the center of the universe, many of us are there because it is so pastoral. And we have two of the most powerful congressmen. They come from a small part of Massachusetts just because of the fact that they've been there a long time, seniority, and they're both excellent, good men.
Then we have the Western District, the 27th Congressional District in New York, Alan, which was vacated in September with the resignation, as we know, of former Republican Representative Chris Collins. There's a second Democrat entering the race now, and this is Melody Baker from the Buffalo Erie County area, Director of Education for the United Way. But that seat, which is in a heavily favored Republican district.
Absolutely. I don't have great expectations. Now, this is going to be a Trump-centered election. So you might find, an upset here. But I think that the Republicans lucked out in many ways because they had very damaged goods who were there, who was himself there, who wouldn't get off the dime and resign. Now he's gone, so you can have a Republican, the natural-born Republicans can vote for whoever that candidate is going to be. It's the Republicans to lose, the way I see it.
Then there's this other article by Vivian Wang in the New York Times talking about New York specifically, but the headline, Incomprehensible Numbers, How Republicans Are Losing New York Suburbs. In one county, yep, on Long Island, the Democrats grew by more than 150,000, while the Republicans dropped by more than 30,000. You and I have talked about whether New York Republicans will be extinct eventually.
Well, we don't know. Trump isn't helping things. I think the fact that Elise Stefanik has become a major defender of this president could turn around and bite her. You never know. The blueness of New York State is undeniable. Long Island, which used to be a Republican bastion, you'll all remember Senator Pothole, Alphonse D'Amato, being out there and really running the whole thing, and you needed his approval for virtually every job and everything else. At least that's what we were told at the time. That's all done. And with some regularity, Democrats are winning out there. And that means, another chunk of the Republican operation is lost. And now, David, that the Republicans are in the minority in the Congress, there isn't an argument we can deliver because they can't.
You'll remember the state passed the green light law, which allows undocumented immigrants to get driver's licenses, Alan. And the Erie County clerk, this is Mickey Kearns, sued, said, we don't want to do this. Well, last week, a federal judge determined that Kearns did not have standing to challenge the state's green light law. Kearns had previously predicted the suit would go all the way to the Supreme Court, but was not prepared the day of the decision to talk about the appeals process. He said he filed a notice of appeal on Wednesday. This one, it was a tough one for some of these county clerks.
Well, let me say this. They are looking for the base that Trump has always claimed. And, you know, this is a tough one because there are many people who don't think this is right, that people who are not here legally should be allowed to drive automobiles. I am on the other side. I think, on the other hand, that you have to have rules for how people behave on the road. We know people are going to drive anyway. You may as well give them licenses and hold them responsible. Nevertheless, how many cases will go to the Supreme Court is the question. They're going to pick and choose the ones that seem most reasonable to them. And there's an awful lot of stuff on the way up to that high court.
We talked about congresspeople and their powerful committees. What about the fact that Representative Anthony Brindisi in one of those purple districts in the Utica area has been named to the powerful House Armed Services Committee? Of course, a prominent position for a freshman Democrat.
You bet. Now, look, you don't have to be from political science graduate school to understand what's happening here. Brindisi, of course, is in one of the most difficult districts for a Democrat to win in. He won by just a few votes. So you do everything in your power to buttress him, and you put him on a committee of his choice or their choice that will help. If you've got military bases in and around, all the better. And so that's why he's there.
There's this ongoing fight, and our Karen DeWitt has been reporting on it in the program this week about the new criminal justice law set to be on the books in the new year. A number of Republicans, including in the Capital Region, and this Senator Todisco being one to push this, is the idea of discovery and shortening up the time period for when evidence has to be put in. And quite frankly, many of the district attorneys are behind this.
Well, sure. District attorneys will do what's easiest for them. They're not going to stab themselves. This is by producing evidence for the accused. Many civil libertarians will say this is the right thing to do, and you have to do it from the beginning. You make the system fairer for defendants. And, of course, if you're the prosecutor, you don't need it. But the prosecutors argue, if you're going to do this, then you better give us some more money to make sure that it's done right. A very coherent argument for many people. Nevertheless, on the face of it, even though at least one of those prosecutors is a very good friend of mine, on the face of it, you want to make sure that the people who are accused of crimes have the right to defend themselves.
Well, this week on Tuesday marked the last day 18-year-olds could buy tobacco products in New York. It rose to 21.
Well, you know, there'll always be those who say if you're old enough to fight, you're old enough to smoke. On the other hand, we know that smoking kills people. It's that simple. It just kills them. And now we have the whole vaping concept, you know, people who are dying as a result of this. So do you pass laws which basically protect them, the people who are most vulnerable? All right, so let's take a look at other things. Do you have a right to have heroin? You know, you don't. This is a tough one for many people. We know that young people often smoke, and it is a terrible scourge. I think government has a right to try to protect them. Nevertheless, I don't know how effective they'll be. And of course, David, you create a black market. If you say you can't smoke until you're 21 and you need to show proof, there'll always be somebody who'll sell you cigarettes, and they will not always be the best of character.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartoff. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Well, after last week's elections, there was mixed reaction from New York's politicians and political parties. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Governor Andrew Cuomo says he's pleased that Democrats gained a county executive seat in Monroe County, where incumbent Republican Cheryl DeNoffel was defeated by Democrat Adam Bellow. Bellow will be the first Democratic county executive there in 30 years. Two swing counties on either end of the state remained in Democratic hands. Erie County Executive Mark Poloncarz beat back a challenge from Republican Lynn Dixon. And in Suffolk County on eastern Long Island, Steve Ballone won a second term against GOP candidate John Kennedy. Cuomo says it's proof to him that their governments were effective.
Suffolk County, Steve Ballone is doing great things. Erie, Buffalo, the county executive is doing great work. The state government is doing great work. We also won Monroe County, which is a very big deal. That's first time in decades. So I think the voters rewarded performance, which is what they should do.
Some Republican incumbent county executives did keep their seats, including Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro. He won a third term in office. Molinaro unsuccessfully challenged Cuomo in the 2018 governor's race. The state's conservative party in a statement praised Molinaro's win, as did the Republican Party. State GOP Chair Nick Langworthy said in a statement that there were solid Republican wins in every region of the state, including victories that flipped control of the Long Island town of Hempstead, the nation's largest town, to Republicans, as well as GOP takeover of the Clinton County Legislature in northern New York. There was one statewide election, a special election to replace Olean Senator Kathy Young. She resigned earlier this year to take a job at Cornell University. Young, a Republican, was replaced by GOP candidate George Burrell in the heavily Republican district. Nationally, Democrats took over the Virginia state legislature. And in Kentucky, the state of U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, the Democratic Attorney General Andy Beshear, was poised to take over the governorship. Cuomo says those wins are significant.
I think the win for the Democrats in Kentucky was a very big deal. The Virginia legislature was a very big deal for Democrats. What does it mean next year? You know, who knows?
New York for the first time had early voting. Polls were open in select locations for 9 days before Election Day. More than 250,000 New Yorkers opted to cast their ballots early. That's about 2% of all registered voters. Voting rights advocates, including the League of Women Voters, say the early voting was largely successful, but they want to tweak the rules to include more polling sites in counties with smaller populations and to require that each county provide a polling site in its largest urban center. Cuomo says he's open to revisiting the law to perhaps improve it.
The question is always the implementation, and we have to study how it actually worked and where it worked. I'm sure we can do it better in some places, but the idea is right, and it's long overdue, and I'm proud we did it.
Early voting is expected to grow in popularity during the high-stakes presidential primary and general election in 2020. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
The importance of getting broadband service into underserved areas of New York, specifically the Adirondacks and North Country region, was the focus of a recent forum in Plattsburgh. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there and filed this report.
In January 2018, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was in Plattsburgh to announce that Phase 3 of a plan to reach 100% broadband coverage by 2019 across the state had begun.
From the state's point of view, it's a chief economic issue, it's an educational issue, it's a health care issue, it's an equity issue, it's a fairness issue. Relatively, we got it done in a short period of time, you know, about 4 years. The more isolated the area, the harder, obviously.
A panel of state legislators and advocates appearing last week on the Mountain Lake PBS Forum, Bridging the Digital Divide, say substantial gaps remain. 115th Assembly District Democrat D. Billy Jones has been appointed to a new upstate cellular coverage task force, which will identify service gaps and make recommendations on how to close them.
Right now, at the beginning of this cell phone task force, we're tackling the major routes in and out of areas here in the rural North Country and all over upstate. But there are a lot of areas here in the North Country that do not have cell service. We have to identify those areas.
Among the challenges discussed during the forum was the Adirondack Park Agency's strict zoning and a policy that requires cell towers to be substantially invisible. Jones also noted that the task force is likely to recommend the governor put money in the budget to create subsidies that motivate companies to invest in the region.
We need to put higher towers here in the Adirondacks. We need to get over that tree line to get proper service to our residents, and it's going to be the quickest, most efficient way. We're talking about public safety.
Republican State Senator Betty Little of the 45th Senate District is also a member of the task force.
We really can't get into the future and to grow our year-round population unless we have cell coverage and broadband here. If we concede that towers within the Adirondack Park need to look like a tree, that's a starting point for getting taller towers.
Adirondack Mountain Club Executive Director Neil Woodworth brought up a practical consideration that brought the conversation back to the need for subsidies.
It's not the aesthetics as much as the taller the tower, the more expensive the tower. And you can't divorce the economics.
Some steps have been taken to improve access. Woodworth pointed to a constitutional amendment passed by state voters that allows broadband lines to be placed near highways.
What this constitutional amendment permitted was the co-location or burying of new fiber lines, new broadband lines, within a certain distance of the highway. And that opened a lot of bottlenecks that prevented us from running the most advanced types of broadband line and cellular lines.
Adirondack Action founding member Dave Wolf says officials should approach installation of broadband and cellular technologies as a utility.
It's kind of like food, shelter, and broadband. It's a necessity. The problem is with the current makeup of the FCC, I don't think in the near future you're going to see any support from the federal government to do universal build out of fiber or coax. So it really comes down to the state of New York must do it on its own.
Audio is courtesy of Mountain Lake PBS. A link to the complete forum is at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
With veterans honored this week, New York Congressman Antonio Delgado has been focusing on veterans issues in recent days. The Democrat tells the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn he's introduced a bipartisan bill pertaining to local veteran cemeteries.
The Democrat from the 19th House District's bill is called the Fairness for Local Veterans Cemeteries Act.
Well, one of the first meetings I had as a congressman was with my Veterans Advisory Committee. We have four. We have veterans, small business, ag, and health care. Steve Massey, who is a former director of the Ulster County Veterans Service Agency, slid over to me a draft of a proposed bill that would speak to the issue here in New York, where our veteran cemeteries are operated at the county level, and yet the federal funding is limited to states accessing those funds. And so four states, including New York, are in this odd position where they don't have the capacity to access the funds separate and apart from the state to improve upon, expand county-operated cemeteries.
The bill would allow counties to apply for veteran cemetery funding, provided that the state does not have any state-operated cemeteries in its jurisdiction.
The reason why I do these advisory committees is to be informed at the local level, to take ideas with me back to Washington. And this is a classic example of where somebody locally was able to pinpoint an issue for me. I bring it back to D.C. and was able to find bipartisan support rather quickly. And now, as we come upon Veterans Day, we're able to introduce it this week.
Delgado introduced the bill with Republicans Elise Stefanik of New York, Brian Mast of Florida, and Don Young of Alaska. Oregon is the fourth state with county-operated veterans cemeteries. Delgado and Stefanik have co-sponsored other veterans measures, including one in February with North Carolina Republican Ted Budd that honors the life of Chief Petty Officer Shannon Kent of Pine Plains, Dutchess County. The resolution marks her service to the nation and calls for the Department of Defense and Department of the Navy to review the policies that, following Chief Kent's thyroid cancer, deemed her fit to serve in Syria but barred her from pursuing a Ph.D. Delgado was set to hold a veteran reintegration panel at midday Friday in Troy. Panel participants are discussing employment opportunities, mental health support, VA benefits, and community engagement for veterans following military service. The panel includes community leaders, heads of veteran support organizations, and others, including Republican State Assemblyman Jake Ashby.
You know, the fact is we have to figure out how to bring all the different local stakeholders together and do so in a fashion that allows us to identify a common ground across the political spectrum, particularly when it comes to this issue. I don't see how this should be a partisan issue. So, getting the Assemblyman Jake on board. We also have the director of the Greene County Veterans Service Agency, Michelle Dale, is going to be on. She's great. She does a lot of the honor vet events in Greene County.
Delgado, who notes there are more than 40,000 veterans living in his 19th district, says there are a number of bills he wants to see make it to the president's desk. One is the Bipartisan Service Disabled Veteran Small Business Continuation Act. It would provide the surviving spouse of a service-disabled veteran with a federal contracting preference as a service-disabled veteran-owned small business with the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Small Business Administration.
I also have a bill that I introduced to track our veterans who were exposed to PFAS. I know the Blue Water Bill actually passed the House, which extends benefits to our veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange during the Vietnam War, which we should get through the Senate, I would hope. And I think one of the things that we have to do better, and I do anticipate, going back to Washington to think more through this, is what we can do at the federal level to provide more opportunities for our veterans to locate affordable housing and to locate employment. We talk a lot about benefits and the services, healthcare-wise, that the VA provides, which are no doubt critical. And we should make that process as easy as possible for our veterans. And I also think that we do a bit more work making sure that our veterans are able to find employment.
In May, Delgado introduced bipartisan legislation to address the unemployment crisis for military spouses with his Military Spouse Hiring Act.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1946. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustinov.